Barry, before we get to the Caps, we've been talking all morning about the Panthers, relocation, non-traditional markets, that whole thing. Talk a little bit about how you saw Nashville grow as a market while you were there as coach.
Well, Nashville was a great example of, I think, a success story in the new markets. I mean, they look at a team like San Jose, which we played last night. That's another good example. If you would have said to people 20 years ago, you know, would you have hockey in San Jose, California? People would say you're crazy, and it's a great market. So I think Nashville is following that in those footsteps of a team like San Jose, a real good market. It's a city that's learning hockey, and they're sort of starting to get into that next generation. When I got there, you know, there was no kids really playing hockey. Now they're building rinks. There's more kids playing hockey. There's a really good, strong fan base, and they know the game. And that's what you want. I said that my legacy in Nashville will probably be that, that's been my home. So that's probably where, my grandma, sit there and watch a hockey, NHL hockey in Nashville, Tennessee with my grandkids. I think that'll be real special, and that we were able to stabilize that. It was a tough first couple of years, but I think it's a great market now.
Yeah, that's key. And you mentioned San Jose. I think it took 15 years for one player to be born in San Jose and drafted into the NHL. Maybe 20 years. I can't remember the exact number. And Dallas is the same. Dallas has a good grassroots program. Nashville, as you mentioned as well. The key really at the end of it is build the grassroots program. And Barry, as you well know, get sticks in kids' hands as soon as possible.
Absolutely. And I think what you'll find in these markets is that, you're starting to build ranks, but some of the players have a big say in it. Some of the players who are retiring in Nashville, Tennessee, J.P. Dumont and Jim McKenzie and Stu Grimson and people like that who played in the NHL, they're now involved in minor hockey, they're involved with Predators or whatever. Those markets grow because of those people. And when those markets grow, you start seeing, kids from the Dallas area, California, Nashville, Tennessee, they're now playing in the National Hockey League. And I always said that there's a war of northern aggression, that we didn't want teams in the States and we wanted more in Canada, and I get all that. But we got such a great game that if we can have it all in North America, I think it's fantastic and around the world. And the great thing about the new, non-traditional markets down in the States is that, in fact, there's more kids and people playing hockey in the United States of America now than all of Canada, which is, you listed that 20 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case.
Yeah, I think the growth rate, Barry, is in Canada, the growth rate for boys, for girls is much higher, but for boys, I think it's at 2.5%, where in the United States it's closer to 6%. So it's not as if the game isn't growing in Canada, it's just growing at a bigger rate in the United States.
Yeah, and the population is also, 10 times the population, so you get more and more athletes playing the game, and you're getting more facilities built, and that's the key. If you don't have the facilities, you're not going to play ice hockey if you don't have the rinks.
Yeah, and I will also point out, of course, that that's with global warming, so let's all celebrate that.
Well, here's one of the things I cannot understand, and I'm off the subject on a soapbox. One of the things that keep costs down for young players is obviously ice time's so big. I don't know why us non-traditional markets and more of the Sun Belts, why we don't use solar energy on top of our buildings. There's a big blank space, and the biggest costs for arenas are, in fact, electricity. So someone should jump on that idea, and I get a piece of that if they
and
do.
Well, that's right. Andrew Ferentz, move over. There's a new leader to the Green
that's
Initiative
right.
in the NHL.
Absolutely.
It's Barry Trotz, Washington Capitals head coach. It's a good idea, Barry.
Barry Trotz, the man who invented ice through sunlight. That is your legacy, sir. What? All right. So as a coach, last night as a coach, are you mostly happy they rallied from 3-0 down and got a point at that thing, or are you kind of upset that they went 3-0 down?
I think as a coach, you're upset you go 3-0 down, but then you look at the goals, and it's sometimes it's ice hockey. I mean, they had three scoring chances in the first period, all of them went in, and we were looking at them today, and if Fulbright and Holtby, if those goals were scored in three separate games, I would say, oh, he had no chance on that one. You screened really well on that one. You'd probably wouldn't even think twice. It would just be a a normal hockey goal, but they happened, all three of them. They had three scoring chances, three in the net. We changed the mojo. Yesterday before the game, I was, you know, after the first period, I was not happy, but, you know, when I went home last night and then I talked to our team this morning, as I said, the great thing about that is that we had the ability to come back. We had the wherewithal to come back from a three-goal deficit twice and a two-goal deficit once to get a point against arguably the best team out of the blocks in the National Hockey League. So that says a lot about where we are or where we're going.
An interesting point as well, and many people have made this point, and it's not just with your Caps, but previous with Adam Oates, with Hunter, and before with Bruce as well. Two goals last night for Alexander Ovechkin in the gameplay, but when it came to the shootout, it was Backstrom, it was Kuznetsov, it was Eric Fehr. A lot of eyebrows are always raised when Alexander Ovechkin isn't in the shootout. Why, Barry, from the coach's point of view?
Actually, this is funny you ask that. I asked the same thing, and in the shootout percentages based on, this is my analytics approach, which all the media is all over. Alex has the fifth best scoring percentage in the national, or not in the National Hockey League, but you know, on our team.
Right.
And so he was actually, I moved him up. He was going to be the fourth shooter. And we practiced the shootout and all that. Some guys aren't great at it. It was great. Last night, might want to redo it. I thought he had a pretty good hand, so that's why I moved him up to the four hole. The other three guys have been pretty money for us, based on, you know, what I've seen in practice, what we've seen at different areas. I mean, Kuznetsov had just been in a string of scoring 14 of his last 16 attempts in KHL and NHL, so I was going to go with him, and Nick Backstrom's usually pretty good money, and he's number two on our team in terms of overall shooting percentage when it comes to shootouts. And Alex was down the list a little bit. You know, Wayne Gretzky didn't even want to take him. He might have been the best player of all time. So shootouts is a little bit of a different animal sometimes.
Now that you've been there through camp and a few games, is there anybody on the team that you maybe didn't realize something about that you realize about them now that you've been coaching them?
Well, there's 23 guys that I could probably answer that question to just because it's a new team. But I will tell you this, that I knew Nick Backstrom was a good player. I didn't realize how great of a player he was. You know, he is all as good as any, you know, a Joe Thornton when it comes to the passing and making plays. And he's as good as a Bergeron when he's going head to head against him. I mean, he's a complete player, and he does it with such ease, and he does it under the radar. And this guy is an absolute superstar that I would put him out against anybody in the National Hockey League, and he could be, he's as complete a player as you're going to find.
I want to ask you about Alexander Ovechkin and how you coach him. I mean, with all due respect to the players you had on the Predators, this is the first time in a lot of ways, Barry, you've been able to drive a Ferrari. I mean, he really is that type of player. And if you look at his last three coaches previous to you, whether it was Adam Oates or Dale Hunter or Bruce Boudreau, those were all forwards when they played. You're a Regina Pats defenseman coming out of the Western League, coached by Brian Murray and Jack Sangster, and we all think of Sangster's gangsters. How do you handle Alexander Ovechkin coming at it from your point of view?
Well, I think honesty and being honest and fair and being concise with him of what exactly I want. And I think, you know, I got to spend some time with Alex. We got to know each other. We still don't know each other, but I think there's a level of trust. You see, you know, I've had three coaches come in here and said, you know, boy, you've got Ovi playing a really solid two-way game. And I said, well, I appreciate that, but really it's really Alex Ovechkin that's doing it. I'm giving him some tips. He's following it. Like last night, I thought he was as good as any player. He might have been the best player on the ice. He got two goals. He was physical. The 235-pound body was slamming guys. He blocked a couple of critical blocks. He's in position. He's been a force, and he's in that all three games for us. So he's a player that cares. I heard a lot of, you know, all of the questions I got is, you know, Alex is not really controllable or doesn't listen. And that's absolutely the total opposite. He listens, he cares, he wants to be a better player. And I think it's just been honest, and whatever connection that we have, I think plain and simple, it's all about the team. And he's really is all about the team. Some of my, I'll say, perceptions were way off. I'm glad that I was way off in a lot of those perceptions.
Rare is the player in the National Hockey League that can make a big impact in just over 5 minutes of average ice time. But every time the Caps play, Liam O'Brien's name seems to be all over Twitter. What is the deal with Liam O'Brien and the impact he's making for you this year?
Well, here's a player that came into development camp, and he was actually injured for a good part of it. He had a cut on his ankle, which is right on where you tie your skate, and so he missed a good part of that, but I think he listened and learned, and then he got into the scrimmage and played quite well, and then he came into our rookie camp and just seemed to be getting better and better. And then he's as hard a guy as you're going to meet, but he's got some ability, which is fantastic. He gets around the ice quite well. He's hard to play against, and he gets to those hard areas. And every night he's either pulling us into the fight, he's either getting a scoring chance or creating scoring chances, or he's having an impact on the game. And as he keeps growing, I think we have a good player in Liam O'Brien. He is, I think he's that right type of player that the National Hockey League is going to, a hard-nosed, physical, hard-to-play-against type of guy who can give you good minutes. I know his minutes are a little bit limited right now, but I can see him playing on a regular sort of third line or even a fourth line that you use a four-line mentality with, that he would be fine. I mean, I see him killing penalties down the road. I see him moving up and playing higher role. I mean, he's just gotten better and better as he's stayed with us. His ability to handle the speed and the pucks and the thinking process of the higher level has been exceptional. He's been really, really good and really a good team player.
I don't know, Barry. I was trying to think about this the other week when he made the team. I don't know, Barry, if I've ever seen a player go through the NHL draft twice and then make an NHL team at a camp the next season. I'm scratching my brain trying to figure one out.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I can come up with any, but I've had good fortune over the course of time that we've had players that either someone in the organization has seen or maybe I've seen or a coaching staff has seen or it's just, you know, as much as it is just great timing for that individual, but it's people that get there at their own pace. You know, the Andrew Burnett's, the Joel Wards that I had in Nashville, give you some old names like Yachmanev, yep, and people like that who were out of the league and came back into the league as really good players. So hopefully this is a young guy who's just found his stride at, you know, he didn't find his stride at 18 and 19, but he's finding his stride at 20 and 21.
Barry, I can honestly tell you, Barry, when I woke up this morning, I never thought that I would hear the name Vitaly Yachmanev again. So thank you for that, reminding me of that name from the NHL. That was awesome.
Yeah, he was one of those exceptionally smart players,
yep,
that never got any credit for what great instincts he had as a player.
He wakes up every morning hoping to hear that, so it's very exciting for him. Finally for me, Barry, what is the status report, progress report on super rookie Yevgeny Kuznetsov? Do you think there's a chance he could play his way up to a bigger role in this lineup, or is it just a bit of a learning curve for him?
I think he's a player that's getting better and better. You know, he's going into the new position in a new, you know, obviously he played some games last year in Washington in the smaller rink, but he's playing center ice. Him and Burkowski are converted wingers that we stuck in the middle. And I see Kuzi's skill level just going better and better. Him and Burkowski are two players that I think, you get to the 40 game mark, they're going to be pretty high in our lineup right now. They're both, they're sort of in the, I would say in the top 10 in a lineup right now. in terms of our overall team, I could see them getting into the, you know, the top seven.
And finally for me, and this story will involve a Russian name, let's get a quick story out of Barry Trotz. Barry, take us back to, I want to say it's 1998. It's an exhibition game, the first pro game, I believe, in Arkansas. It's your Preds against the Dallas Stars. It's at the State Fairgrounds, and it's Paper Airplane Night. And I believe the story involves Sergei Krivokrasov. Can you fill us in on that one?
Well, I remember the we were doing the exhibition game, and I believe it was the was it Blaine Stoughton who was sort of handling that.
The old Cardford Whaler.
Yeah, and so they had this contest at the end of the game. If you got, you make these paper airplanes, you put your name on the paper, and someone sponsored this bass boat, and you were going to throw these paper airplanes, the closest one to center ice wins the bass boat. Well, we ended up in, I think, a 1-1 tie or 2-2 tie. Well, all of a sudden, all these paper airplanes come on the ice, and instead of going to overtime and the shootout, we just ended the game right there. And it'll go down in my book when I write it and when I'm done playing the game and coaching in this game. But it was a new, unique thing, because when you're a non-traditional market, you went to non-traditional places, you had non-traditional things happen to you that are are funny.
You know, it's funny, but I remember talking once upon a time to the original play-by-play voice of the Birmingham Bulls. So old WHA team came over from Toronto. And I asked, what did fans in Birmingham get really excited about? I thought it'd be like the fights or the big goals, slap shots, you know, WHA kind of stuff. Big hair, mustaches. He said, whenever we did a wholesale line change, the place went crazy. Because when you think about it, hockey's the only sport where all five guys, while the play's going on, can leave the surface, and five more came back. He said, in Birmingham, this gave fans the biggest thrill of all time. So when you hear the Krivokrasov story scoring to tie things up, and here come the paper airplanes, I always think of that Birmingham Bulls story where five, you know, wholesale line changes are getting standing ovations.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was funny. My first game in Nashville, they stood the whole warm-up.
Really?
Yeah, it was, the place was packed. It was our opening game, and they stood the whole warm up. And I don't know if you know anything about the when the Nets came in or not. Obviously, you do, but people did not realize that those pucks are really hard. And in warm up, if you're not paying attention, you're behind the net. You are probably going to get hit with one of those. And I remember the going out for warm up and watching the other team, and I know they. There was people, there's, you know, crowds of people, like eight or nine behind our net up in the stands that were, you know, crowded around people who got hit with pucks. And our medical staff and the building staff were on overload that night because people didn't realize that those things were coming over the glass.
Yeah, those frozen back black things, they kind of sting. Barry, this has been a real delight. Best of luck the rest of the way with the Caps, and we'll catch up soon.
All right, take care.